Welcome to The Playlist Podcast, a weekly discussion of films and TV. I'm your host, Charles Barfield, managing editor of The Playlist. And of course, I'm joined this week by my co-hosts, Mike D'Angelo and Brian Farver. Are you guys ready to talk some awards contenders?
Yeah, let's do this.
Yeah.
All right. That's right, folks. This week, we're going to discuss two films that are vying for trophies as 2020 comes to a close. Those films are Nomadland and Another Round. Both of these movies are arriving in select theaters this weekend and will be the topic of conversation in the weeks to come as awards organizations begin to announce their nominations and trophies are handed out. But before we get into the discussion of these fine films, I also want to mention that we just released a special episode of the Playlist Podcast this week where we talked to director Darius Marder about Sound of Metal. That's another film that's already earned some awards season chatter. And if you want to hear that podcast, all you have to do is check out the Playlist Podcast Network, which includes The Discourse, Be Real, The Fourth Wall, and more. And as always, to find us, you just have to check your podcast app of choice, whether that's Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, Anchor, Stitcher, or anywhere else that you find your favorite shows. Okay. So this week we're going to be discussing, as I mentioned, two films that are going to be on some best of lists this year. And the first one's going to be Nomadland, directed by Chloe Zhao. This is a movie that stars Frances McDormand as a woman that has lost just about everything in her life after the passing of her husband and the loss of her job as her small town gets hit hard economically. She then just packs up everything and builds a makeshift RV out of a cargo van and hits the road. Along the way, she meets other nomads and hears their stories. The film is written and directed by Ja, who's coming off her acclaimed feature, The Writer, and has Marvel Studios' massive superhero blockbuster Eternals coming to theaters in 2021. That is, if movies ever go back to theaters. But let's talk Nomadland. This is a film that premiered at this year's Venice Film Festival and went on to win the coveted Golden Lion as the festival's best picture. Brian, go to you first. Does Nomadland live up to the hype? Is this the Oscar contender that everyone thinks it is?
Absolutely. And I mean, to be honest, I hadn't heard of this movie until really not that long ago. And it probably was due to some article about the Eternals or something like that. But man, within the first 5-10 minutes, I mean, I knew what the plot was, but really very shortly after it started, I was hooked. The concept of this woman just traveling, you know, traveling the country. I've always been fascinated by people who do that. I've followed a lot of people on YouTube who, you know, subscribe to the van life, and a lot of other people, like there's some rock climbers I've followed who do a lot of dirt bagging and then kind of just travel around the country like that. I've always found that to be a super fascinating way of life. And this movie, which I also didn't know, actually features real life nomadic people, like some of Frances McDormand's characters' friends. They're all great. McDormand, I guess what I can say about her is you really can't go wrong with Frances McDormand in a film. I mean, I knew she'd be good. I didn't know she'd be this good. And it's cool to see an actress like that continuing to impress me even after all the decades of accolades and amazing roles. Is this one of her best? Yes. I mean, her face just looks so weathered, not just in the physical appearance, but you can tell that she's just gone through some stuff, man. And you know, the interactions that she has with those, like I said, those real life nomads, and you know, everyone around her, it always feels very natural, to almost the point of it feeling like almost like a documentary at times. You know, that's not to say that it's an aimless, plotless movie, but it does have that sort of feel that goes with the character of, you know, just traveling, being on the road. Yeah, I was really impressed by this. I didn't think I'd get as sucked into it as I was, but you really take this journey with her. Like you said, she's gone through some horrible stuff, you know, in her recent past, and you're easily able to slip into her shoes. And again, I will owe all that credit to McDormand.
I want to interrupt because I think you're selling it as a movie that you obviously enjoyed quite a bit, but to pull back the curtain a little bit, we did talk about this off air a little bit, and you said that you've actually seen this movie now twice, which mm-hmm. is the benefit of getting a screener at home that you can watch. So this is a movie that you really connected with. I don't know, you can maybe answer this. When's the last time you watched a movie what, twice in a couple days?
Oh, it's been a long time. And I think for this one, the reason why I wanted to go back was this has been a very interesting year with films that draw you in. Like Sound of Metal is another really good example of that. We talked about that very recently, where it has that ability to put you in the main character's shoes. This is another one just like that, where I've said this about a few movies over the past few years. It's less a movie and more of an experience. And I think that's why I connected with it so much. Yeah, I mean, this is definitely something that I could see myself and my spouse doing someday. Just hitting the road like this, obviously, you know, long after the kids have grown. I don't know. I any movie like this that's able to bring me in, whether it's that combination of the great acting, the cinematography. I mean, the landscapes in this movie look amazing. You feel like you're there. And I think that's why I enjoyed this movie as much as I did. I think that's where my tastes are starting to head towards. It's not that I don't enjoy a big budget film, but I enjoy a movie that's able to really treat you with a lot of respect. And that's what I feel Nomadland did, is it treated me almost as like, as not so much as I was watching it, as I was actually there sitting alongside Frances McDormand as she's, you know, listening to a lecture about how to take care of yourself on the road, or you feel like you're an actual fly on the wall as she's giving one of her fellow nomads a haircut. Just little things like this. I that's why I think I connected with this movie so much. And it probably at this point, I'm gonna have to rethink this, but it probably is my favorite movie of the year. So yeah, loved it.
Big words.
Yeah. And I'm mm-hmm. proud of you, Brian.
Oh,
you've grown.
Oh, gee. I'm going to have to rethink this again, because Invisible Man, which is at number one right now, that was pretty good too, but we'll see.
Invisible Man was your number one? Interesting. Okay.
Well, that's only because the Snyder Cut isn't coming out until next year.
That's true. That's true.
Okay, Mike, let's throw it to you. What did you think? Is this as good as Brian's hyping it up to be?
It's definitely not my number one of the year, but it's in my top 10 for sure. I really enjoyed the experience. Chloe has become one hell of an interesting director, and she's able to make these movies basically that put you as a fly on the wall in these very, very interesting situations with interesting people and characters. And that's kind of what makes Nomadland so special is not necessarily Frances McDormand herself, even though she's great in the movie and gives a wonderful performance. It's all these actual real life people that she weaves into the narrative that feel so authentic and are so fascinating, just either in their general appearance or their stories that they're telling, or just whatever they're lending to the movie. It feels so authentic and real that you can you genuinely feel like you're there experiencing it with them, which is a really special thing to behold, even if you're sitting on your couch. And if I was in a darkened theater with this movie, it would be, I can't even imagine how intimate it would feel. But regardless, Frances knocked it out of the park, obviously. But really, I was just blown away by the real people that were telling their stories, and some of the moments that they literally bared their souls just for, I don't know if it was just Frances sitting there talking with them and they can't happen to catch that, or they were able to make them feel comfortable enough on that moment or whatever it was to share that in front of a camera, and even though they know it's there. But generally you don't get that kind of thing from real people that haven't been in front of a camera much. So either way, this fascinating stuff. I definitely put it in my top 10, but I'm not nearly as fascinated with this van culture as you guys tend to be. I'm very much a homebody, and I like my, you know, my space, and have no really romantic feelings about getting out on the open road in a vehicle of sorts that I would likely break down and I would have to fix. And that does not sound like fun. But I believe Frances McDormand can do it. So that's all the better for this movie. But yeah, great movie, wonderful performances, but really just a great ability to capture just the souls of people in front of them.
Yeah, I think that if there's anything, and it's crazy to say this about a movie that stars Frances McDormand and will almost assuredly lead to an Oscar nomination and trophies for this performance for her, more trophies. She's already won Oscars in the past. It's crazy to think that in a movie like that, it's these other people that nobody has heard of unless you are immersed in van life. Those people are the reason that you are so moved by this movie. And like, yeah, you guys, and I think Brian said it, this is, you could take parts of this out of context and swear to God, it's a documentary. Yeah. It's that, yeah, real. And, you know, I can't begin to pretend that I know exactly how this film was made, but I have to assume that Chloe Zhao was just putting a camera in front of these people and asking them to tell their stories, because there's no way this could be scripted. The emotion would give any professional actor a run for their money. There's one scene in particular towards the end, and I'm not going to spoil it, and who gives it, but it's a story that somebody tells that's so deeply personal and tragic that it made me emotional. And to the point where, you know, you just have to wonder, like, where's the line between fiction and reality in this movie? And like Brian said, that could seem almost in the wrong hands. It could seem a little lazy, for lack of a better term, but this isn't lazy at all. This is a beautifully crafted film that just takes advantage, yeah, of some of the best characters that just happen to be real life people. They don't even change their names in the movie. I did a little, you know, reading about the movie after I watched it, because I was just so amazed by some of the characters. And again, I say characters, but they're people. And Linda May, who is a constant source of interaction with Frances McDormand throughout the movie, the book that this movie's based on is based on Linda May's life. So this is a story that is just so universal and so interesting that I defy anybody, even like Mike said, he's not even into van life, has no romantic ideas of life on the open road, but you just can't help but get sucked into these very real stories. And I think the thing that brings them all together is sometimes it's tragedy, sometimes it's a desire to have this like alternative lifestyle, but really all it is a way to find a connection with, I guess, yourself. I think that's kind of the point of the movie. There are scenes where Frances McDormand is just by herself. She's not talking. It's, you know, she's just kind of living. And those are super powerful. And it's a movie I definitely will revisit. It's a movie I'm going to talk to people about for a long time and try to get them to watch, because I think it is illuminating in some really great ways. And yes, Mike, I like Brian, I am thoroughly obsessed with van life. To the point.
Question for you guys.
Yeah.
David Strathairn, do you think he was just living in a van and they found him and they're like, hey, you want to be in this movie? Or is, yeah, he just the only other actor in the movie?
That's really interesting. So I, watching this movie, and anybody who's a film fan and knows names and faces, you're immediately going to be like, okay, well, there's Frances McDormand and then a lot of people I've never seen, until he comes on screen and you're like, oh my God, you know? He's definitely an actor, because he's given scripted lines. He's not playing himself, obviously. But funny enough, to spoil just a little bit of the movie, you do meet his family and his son in particular. And you look at him and you're like, that looks just like him. So I Googled it and it is his, in fact, son. And the story that the son gives in the movie, it seems to be based at least partly in reality. So even there, the lines between fiction and reality are blurred. So it's you joke about, you know, him just living in a van, but there are parts of the movie which I think are actually real.
Yeah, they come across extremely authentic. And I didn't know that was his son, but that totally makes sense.
Yeah. Well, they looked so much alike. I'm like, either this is the casting of the century or these guys share blood. And turns out that they're you know, father, son. As I was saying, I'm thoroughly obsessed with van life, and my wife and I spent months on the road this summer, and we went to some of the places that were featured in this movie, and they're just as beautiful. And I think that is one of the things that Chloe Zhao does so well, is she captures these landscapes, like Brian said, that are almost too beautiful to get, you know, a picture to justify, but somehow she gets it pretty spot on. Which is incredible. Before we wrap up our Nomad talk, I want to talk awards, because, you know, you can't watch a movie like this without thinking of Oscars. we're definitely going to see, as I said, Frances McDormand's going to get a nomination for her performance. There's just no two ways around that. Mm-hmm. So moving past that, where else do you think Nomadland's going to thrive award season? Are we looking at Best Director, Best Picture? You know, where are the categories this movie's going to shine?
I think it deserves to be up there with Best Picture. I'm not sure it should win, just in my opinion, but I think it should definitely be nominated at the very least. Director, I don't know. It's hard to tell. And this is no slight at Chloe, but it's hard to tell what's being directed and what's just being captured, and maybe that's the magic of it. Maybe she does deserve a nominee for that, but I don't know. I don't know. It definitely Best Picture, Best Picture, Best Actress. I'm not sure. Maybe Best Cinematography for sure.
Yeah, I think cinematography is almost a given. Brian, what Agreed. Do you think? Anything else?
Oh, I second all of that. I can't think of any other outlying categories, but definitely those. I mean, I'd like to say that she's a shoo-in for actress, for Best Actress.
Absolutely.
I mean,
yeah, at least the nomination. I don't know if she's
at least a nomination. Yeah. The other categories, I have to agree with Mike. Definitely, we'll see some nominations. Will it win? I don't know, but I would love to see McDormand take home the statue again.
So here's the thing to bring light to the movie, because we've been talking pretty seriously about it. If for no other reason, they should give her a trophy, because this is a woman that defecated in a Home Depot bin camera.
That's true.
It is like it's silly, but the scene is like it's masterful, and I'm not even joking. It's a pretty incredible scene, and you just watch it, and you're like, "Am I really watching Frances McDormand do this on screen?" And you are, and you're just captivated.
Mm-hmm. Either that, or it's the best effects in the biz.
Yeah, maybe that's where Chloe Zhao got Eternals, is she figured out how to green screen inside of a van. But
and Kevin Feige went, interesting.
There's something I like here. It. Yeah. Okay. So
get her in here.
Next up, we have another Oscar contending film, Another Round, from director Thomas Vinterberg. It's a movie that our own Greg Elwood thinks is going to be guaranteed a Best International Film nomination. It's a Danish movie that tells the story of four teachers that are completely in a rut. Mads Mikkelsen leads the way as a history teacher that's lost his passion for teaching, lost the spark with his wife, and is completely disinterested in just about everything. That's when his friend recommends a radical new experiment where they'll maintain a certain amount of drunkenness throughout the day to see if their alcohol can improve their lives and make them happy again. As you might expect, some things go right, others go very, very bad. Mike, what are your thoughts on Another Round? Were you happy to see Mads Mikkelsen in a role that didn't require him killing anyone?
I mean, I love pretty much anything Mads Mikkelsen does, to be completely honest. He makes a great villain in all the, you know, American franchises that he's in. But I absolutely adored watching him be this raw and vulnerable and then charismatic. And I mean, he just kind of really has a whole rainbow of emotions that he is displaying in this film, and some skills that you didn't know he had, especially at the end. But really, the story is extremely unique. Yes, you could absolutely see this being made and kind of cringeworthy, but the way it's approached, you know, for the four friends are all kind of very fleshed out throughout the whole movie. And you get to know everybody, but Mads just kind of dominates this movie with probably one of my favorite performances of the year, period, not foreign film wise, just in general, as this just like pathetic, grumpy old, you know, shell of a man in the beginning. And then as the plot goes forward, you see him change and become, you know, this charismatic, awesome father, husband, teacher, as they kind of test this theory and as it goes. But it really kind of poses some really interesting questions when it comes to alcohol consumption. I know we're obsessed with it in this state of Wisconsin, as we're based in the Milwaukee area. But I will say, like, I don't know how to really come at it without spoiling everything. But basically, you know, can we just kind of mention the experiment that they go by?
Yeah, well, I'll just say this. They start with the idea that they just need to drink one or two glasses of wine and just consistently be buzzed throughout the day and then not drink at night. And then from there, they see positive side effects and they decide to kind of up the dosage, so to speak. And that's kind of where stuff goes off the rails.
And yeah, it's fascinating to watch, like, the experiment play out. And this is an actual, like, experiment or hypothesis that someone had and brought up and kind of pursued, but to see it played out in a like a dramatic film, it's pretty interesting to kind of watch Mads Mikkelsen like run the gamut as far as emotions go and absolutely kill it in the role of Martin. But I loved it. I was absolutely bonkers for this movie. It's definitely in my top three. I haven't really slotted it in quite yet. Yeah, I think this is one of the best films of the year for me.
And that's interesting because when I proposed this movie to you guys, I don't believe either one of you were super aware of what it was. And
no,
Mike, I don't. Yeah. And to hear you rave about it, it's quite something.
I mean, I try to get in a couple of at least some of the foreign films that are nominated every year. But I would be shocked if this wasn't nominated. This is a wonderful film.
Great. So, Brian, were you as enamored as Mike?
Yeah, surprisingly, yes. I mean, it's definitely
surprisingly
not...
how you always agree with Mike. It was a trick question.
Oh dear.
Sucker.
Oh. No,
okay.
Dear.
So yeah, what did you think?
No, you know, I definitely enjoyed it. I don't know where it's gonna fall in my, again, in my top 10 revisions. A quick sidebar: I almost put Sonic the Hedgehog in my top 10. Okay.
Like, Jesus Christ.
What a year. Right.
Well, to another be fair, podcast. The highest grossing movie of 2020 after everything is all said and done in the U.S. will be Bad Boys for Life. So,
okay,
all right. It's depressing.
Very well, but yeah, I've enjoyed Mads for the most part. I will say that I haven't been completely on board with some of the roles he's done. Some
Bite
of the
your tongue, Brian.
I'm just saying, Doctor Strange is not my favorite, he was fine.
I'm a huge Marvel fan, and until this moment, I completely forgot he was even in that movie.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yes. Continue.
But yeah, this one I remember you told me about it. I knew very little about it. Reading the concept, I just thought it would be maybe kind of this gimmicky film about, well, let's see what happens when we try this experiment. Part of me thought, is this going to be just some film that glamorizes alcohol, has these big alcohol scenes, much in the same way as a movie like Big Night or Chef glamorizes like the foodie culture? Is it going to be like a beer fest? I don't know. I went to this movie kind of, you know, really not sure what to expect, obviously having literally just heard about it not long beforehand. But Mads is, he is this film. There's a scene at the end that's just wonderful. I think in a way this was kind of the movie I needed to see with regards to Mads. I've enjoyed, like I said, him here and there, but this one, now I think I'm completely on board with Mads Mikkelsen, to the point where the concept, as you know, you hear the concept and okay, that maybe sounds kind of silly, but that's at least the way I felt, to the point where I was, as soon as he took the screen, the movie really picked up speed, and I just became more and more engrossed as it went on. I am going to give so much of the credit to Mads Mikkelsen. And I don't know if this is setting a strange precedent or setting a tone for what we can expect from films going forward. I don't think it's fair to say that two films are going to necessarily be representative of future output from the world of cinema, but these are two great examples of films, No Man's Land and Another Round, where the star not just is the movie, but without them or with a different actor or actress in the role, it would have felt completely different. Maybe this is a role that was made for him, for Mads Mikkelsen. I don't know, but he did what he could and then some. So I agree with Mike 100%. This is a unique film that somehow works, and it's all Mads Mikkelsen.
It threads the needle of being, it easily could have become hokey.
Yeah.
But it really feels genuine the whole way through. And you really invest in the characters,
that's
not
the
only Mads, but his friends as well.
Yes. Well, I went into this movie just like Brian. I, just to give you a little bit of insight on myself, I don't drink at all. And when I come into a movie where I know drinking is the main focus, I tend to be a little disinterested just because I can't relate to anything. That's just kind of not how I am. So like Brian, I came into this thinking like, oh gosh, this has got like a gimmick, right? The hook is a gimmick. This is just going to be like a setup for some sort of hijinks involving teachers that are drunk. You know, I kept getting flashbacks to Cameron Diaz in that terrible movie. And, you know, and I guess like most American film fans, you watch Mads Mikkelsen as the villain in just about everything he's in. You're like, how is this guy going to be likable at all? Right. Are you supposed to hate him? And you watch this movie and there's a scene right at the beginning where it's kind of the plot is laid out, and it's at a birthday party. They're all sitting, it's not a party. They're at a dinner, birthday dinner. They're all sitting at this restaurant and they're kind of like kind of catching up with each other and talking about life as you approach 40 and beyond. And Mads is just talking and he starts to cry. And it's this, like, it's almost jarring if you're used to seeing him as the villain to see him just emote so much. And then throughout the movie, it just sets the stage for what you're going to see, you know, for the rest of the 2 hours. And it's great. And he just, like you said, he keeps upping his game every scene to the point where the last 5 minutes of this movie, I would argue, are maybe the best final 5 minutes of a movie you're going to see all year. It's just, it's beautiful. Like it's a payoff that you don't see coming, but then when it happens, you're like, of course. And we're not spoiling anything. Mike's laughing because if you were to tell me before the movie that this is the end, you know, and you spoiled it for me, I would laugh. But when you watch the last scene of this movie, it's just pure bliss. Like it's joy on screen. And it's not a scene. If you watch Mads Mikkelsen in Hannibal, it's not a scene that you're going to be expecting. I'll just say that much. Overall, and to illuminate just a little bit on what Mike or Brian said about, you know, whether this was written for Mads or not. I don't know specifically, but I do know that Thomas Vinterberg and Mads Mikkelsen have worked together previously on I think like 3 or 4 movies. So it would not surprise me if this movie was not written specifically for him. And good on the director of Vinterberg for this, because it's a role that he just that Mikkelsen absolutely kills. And it's great. And so we kind of skirted around this where we're talking about, because as three American, you know, dumbasses, for lack of a better word, right? We watch our superhero movies, we drink our beer, and we like to we want explosions, right? Like that's what we want in our movies. So this is not that movie. This is a Danish movie that is going to be nominated for Oscars. And I think what succeeds about it, what's the best about this movie is that it rides this tone so well throughout the movie where, you know, it makes you laugh, it makes you cry, it makes you think. And that does sound kind of hokey, but it works. And it's not something you see in American cinema all that often. So with that in mind, Mike, I want to throw it to you. Imagine you're a Hollywood studio and you love to remake foreign films and put that American spin on it as they do.
Yeah.
What would the American version of Another Round look like? And who else other than Adam Sandler stars?
Yeah, of course it would be Adam Sandler starring. Only it wouldn't be like Uncut Gems Adam Sandler. It would just be like straight up Hubie Halloween Adam Sandler.
Yep.
The American version it could have easily been this wacky screwball comedy where a bunch of friends just drink all the time and have a great time at work and, you know, woo, and everybody's happy at the end, nothing bad happens. And that would absolutely be the American version. It would just be like the watered down version that doesn't really get the tone that this thing rode so well. If I were to cast it, when I was watching it, I was absolutely playing this out in my head, like, oh man, if they remake this in America, it's just going to be like Vince Vaughn and the Workaholics guys, you know, just kind of drinking their brains out. And I like Vince Vaughn, but you know, that he did quite a few movies not so long ago where, you know, this would have been right down his alley if they made that American version. So
you could see this, you could see an early 2000s version of this where it's basically the cast of Wedding Crashers, but in another round. Yeah. And, oh man, that would just miss the point. And sadly, I think that's where we're going. So Brian, you love to fantasy cast. So your WB or whoever buys the rights for this movie, who you making the blockbuster money with?
Let's say TriStar comes to you.
Yes,
TriStar. I mean, if TriStar came to me, I would probably want to throw some of those TriStar funds at Bill Hader and get him in the lead role.
That's too good.
He would be a good cast. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's way too smart for a studio. Come on.
I just feel like, man, the tone of this film is very, it is very European.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know.
It would be very easy to turn this into some sort of a, I guess, for lack of a better word, screwball comedy, but man, that would just be that'd be devastating.
it really would. And I think we joke about the fact that, you know, American studios ruin these international movies, and we could talk, you know, we could just laundry list them, right? Like Old Boy is one that immediately comes to mind. I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure there's a million others. We write about them kind of quite often on the site, unfortunately. But it's just one of those things where this is a European sensibility movie, right? They talk about drinking as a matter of fact thing. The kids in high school, the high school equivalent, they are, you know, that's what they do. They drink all the time, and it's just kind of an accepted thing. It's, you know, and to say that an American version would be able to capture that nuance is just kind of a pipe dream. I just don't think it exists. And unfortunately, it would take away from this. And, you know, another thing, speaking of 2020 movies where I think of terrible American remakes, I think of this as the same way as I think of Downhill and Force Majeure. That's another movie that is built on tone, right? Like Force Majeure is a movie that if you just don't get that tone, you can go way off course. And Downhill is a peek into what might be coming on the podcast. Downhill is a movie that completely misses the mark on tone. And I think that, you know, if you want to watch a quality version of Another Round, watch this version before Hollywood ruins it.
And I will admit, I stopped the movie in the middle of it while they were at their peak and went and got a beer. I absolutely did. And if you are like, and if you do have an addictive personality, or maybe, you know, you don't want to be drinking right now, I wouldn't recommend watching this movie.
So that's interesting. I'm glad you brought that up, because I was watching this and again, coming into it, I was thinking like, oh my gosh, you know, this is just going to be all about drinking. And every time they drink, they're not just like pounding brewskis like bros or something. They're drinking like high class alcohol, and it does make it seem really cool. And there's one scene in particular where they're making, I forget what the drink is called, but it includes like absinthe and, you know, just fancy stuff. And you watch it and you're like, well, that does kind of look like fun. I don't drink, so I have no basis to compare that to, but it is a movie that I could see, you know, like a foodie movie to somebody who likes to eat good food. This is going to tickle that bone as well.
You know, that's very interesting, Charles, because like I felt, yeah, Mike, I felt that same way, you know, watching this movie. I almost felt like back in the day when I first saw Super Size Me, this anti-fast food film, I remember watching that for the first time and really craving fast food. So I felt that same way watching this movie, that, man, I really could go for just a nice cocktail right about now. Like it's very unusual how it does that to you. So
it doesn't necessarily more. I mean, it does show the dangers of it, of alcoholism, but it also doesn't necessarily say don't drink,
right?
Which in America maybe a controversial move for a movie to make.
Yes,
at best they say, you know, everything in moderation.
Well, I think yeah. You know, not to spoil anything, because I don't think this is a spoiler at all, but I think the theme of the movie is, you know, finding joy in your life. You know, for some people, and their hypothesis is to find joy at a certain age, you need to have alcohol, right? Like it you know, numbs you a little bit to your anxiety. It heightens other feelings, and you can really kind of live. And I think the moral of the story is that, you know, however you need to live, do it safely first and foremost, but also, you know, like capture that. And I, again, to bring it back to what an American version of this movie might look like, that is a kind of a dangerous thing to say, right? Like, it doesn't wrap up in a, you know, after school special moment. There's no like,
there's no don't drink, kids.
Right. Yeah. There's, you know, there are consequences. Consequences mm-hmm. are very real and earned, but yeah. they don't feel preachy at all. And there's a point in the movie where you think like, oh, they are about to preach to me. I see where this is going. And then they just never do.
Yeah. Which and it works.
Yeah.
Like, I never felt like, ooh, they misstepped there. I mean, I thought it was great. I really, really, really like this movie.
Yeah. It's similar to what we talked about with Nomadland. I want to bring it back to awards. I think without a doubt, this is going to get a Best International Feature nomination for an Oscar. But I think this is also a movie where you might see Mads Mikkelsen sneak in there in a Best Actor scenario. Is that something you guys think could happen? You know, remember, this is a year that might have like a Tom Hanks movie and stuff. So,
yeah.
Before last year, I would have said absolutely not. There's no way a foreign film could really break in. But then Parasite came in and kind of broke that mold. So you never know. Yeah. Another round could step in and be nominated for, you know, Best Feature or Best Director or Best Actor, whatever it is. I just don't know if that's possible. Mm-hmm. I think it's deserving of it. I absolutely love the movie. I love Mads Mikkelsen's performance. So, yeah, I'm all for it. If this could get, you know, more exposure through that, then absolutely.
I think kind of like Parasite, and again, these movies are completely different, but like Parasite, it's a thoroughly entertaining and watchable movie. Like, this is a movie that you could just kind of throw on for just about anybody who's willing to read subtitles, and they're going to be, you know, thoroughly captivated.
Yeah.
What do you think, Brian?
Yeah, I agree too. I felt this way about a number of films this year that I just, at the very, very least, hope it gets more exposure. I mean, yeah, Best International Film, sure, that could very easily see that. The bigger award noms, I don't know.
You gotta make room for Sonic the Hedgehog.
That's right.
Yeah.
Thank God for this movie. If for nothing else, we should write to Thomas Vinterberg and say that your movie kicked Sonic the Hedgehog out of Brian's top 10 list. Mission
100% true.
That's wonderful.
And with that, I think it's time to put a bow on this episode of the Playlist Podcast. Any parting thoughts about these movies, gentlemen? Mike?
See them both, if at all possible. I know Nomadland may be a little more reachable for some of you, you know, but another round I would absolutely search out as soon as it's available. I know it's not going wide for quite a while, but I can only hope that it's going to only, you know, amp up as far as the conversation around it goes. So, yeah, I really hope that both of them get enough conversation to keep them going through Oscar season. And I'm sure they will. At least Nomadland, it seems to be kind of a shoe-in. So, see them both over and over.
Yeah, and just to interject there, Nomadland and Another Round are both getting very limited releases this weekend. I think it's going to be difficult just in the current state of theaters right now to see either of them in a local, you know, cinema. But definitely seek them out. I think a wider release of Nomadland is going to be coming probably January or February, before the Oscar nominations, of course. So, you know, if you can't see them now, don't fret. They're coming. But definitely put these on your list. Brian, any parting thoughts?
See both movies and see them in an undistracted setting. You know, just give them your undivided attention. They both deserve it. There's a lot of care in these films. And I wouldn't say that about, say, your Sonic the Hedgehog, which you could easily watch while you're vacuuming. Watch these movies and just take them for what they are, which are really pieces of art.
Okay, well. Thanks for joining me, Mike and Brian, and Thanks at home for listening. And if you enjoyed this discussion, check out the rest of the Playlist Podcast Network and come back next week when we're going to even talk more nonsense like Sonic the Hedgehog. So have a good day. Bye.
And for the Playlist Podcast, we'll see you later.